Good afternoon, everyone. This is Carrie Cooley with Weatherby Resources. And also joining me is Lynn Stang. Lynn is the co-principal and president for Weatherby Resources, which also houses the Hospice Compliance Network. So Lynn and I wanted to get together this afternoon to kind of just talk about some summer hot topics, things that we heard last week at boot camp, things that we are closely monitoring for the entire industry, and the work that we've been doing to assist our clients with these things. So with that being said, I'm going to start off with asking Lynn just a couple of questions about the Open Door Forum that was held by CMS last week on the new proposed HART tool. So Lynn, I'd really like for you to start by explaining what the HART tool is and what's its intent in the hospice space.
Thanks, Carrie. I'm really happy to join you this afternoon and to discuss these latest regulatory updates. We were so fortunate that while we were at the Weatherby Boot Camp in Seattle last week, that CMS had an open forum to discuss the new HART assessment tool or the proposed HART assessment tool. And so I was able to step away and be able to attend the session, which was about an hour. And then I was able to come back and provide the update from CMS to the participants at boot camp. So they literally got the information hot off the presses right after I did. So that was really exciting. So basically, the HART assessment tool is sort of like the OASIS tool in home health or MDS assessment in long-term care. It is meant, you know, at the sort of the front-facing or first blush, it is meant to be a tool that CMS can see data about patients, more specific data than the current HIS assessment and more comprehensive. We know, however, that after this initial collection of assessment data regarding patients on service, that it will likely be used, the data will likely be used to create a different payment model or payment structure based on what has been collected. So the intent is initially to learn more about patients for CMS and then potentially to change the payment model. We know that the HART tool actually, when it comes out, will replace the current HIS assessment. So that's a little bit different. I actually did not realize that until I was on the call and they began sort of outlining their plan, et cetera.
Very good. So what is the update, Lynn? I know when you and I talked a few months ago, you know, you felt like it was really should be getting close to its next round of testing. But based on what I heard you share last week at boot camp, that is really not where we're at right now with the HART tool. So can you go into the detail of the update that you heard last week?
Sure. So what was most interesting is since last year, we have been under the impression, the industry has been under the impression that CMS had these two pilot programs, Pilot A and Pilot B, and we knew Pilot A uncovered quite a few challenges that were problematic for CMS, and they weren't really sure how to overcome that. And so they put Pilot B on a hold. And so we've been just in a waiting pattern, waiting for Pilot B to be launched using the information from Pilot A as originally scheduled. Well, during this call, what we learned was that that former process, Pilot A and Pilot B, have been scrapped. They basically said, this just isn't going to work. We need to start over. So starting over for CMS meant that they wanted to open up the process from the beginning. And how they opened it was they said, we're going to start with a different phase. And that phase is information gathering. And so in May of this year, they opened up information gathering where they started reaching out to focused hospices, industry leaders, experts, and then also doing research on different types of assessment tools. And through that, they said, we're going to spend the summer getting more and more information from all of these resources so that they are better prepared to put together a tool. So now what they have done is they have decided they're going to rename these tools Alpha and Beta, so versus Pilot A and Pilot B, And what they want to do is once they've finished this information gathering is they want to launch alpha testing, which they believe will start sometime in 2020. And once they launch this beta or this alpha testing, they will take the data, and CMS was very clear and emphatic in that they plan to take an extensive amount of time doing post-testing analytics and revisions based on the results from the alpha testing well before they launch the beta testing. Once they've gone through alpha testing, and beta testing would also involve post-testing analytics and possible revisions, then they would have to go to rulemaking before it's ever launched to hospices to use, for hospices to use. So one of the participants on the call said, so are you looking at a 12 to 24 month time frame from start to finish? And CMS's response was, no, that's too aggressive. We don't believe that we will be ready in 12 to 24 months. We think it's going to take longer. And the reason they said that is they want it to be a mindful, thoughtful process. And they said over and over again that they don't want it to negatively impact patient care and to, you know, negatively impact operations. So they want to be very mindful about how they do this. Now, the time frame that the assessment will be completed was basically the biggest discussion point. Currently, they want it to be completed at admission, 60 days, and upon discharge. They've been kind of toying with the idea of whether that is too infrequent. So a lot of CMS's questions to the participants were about what kind of frequency would be acceptable to hospices. And I was a little, I shuddered a little bit because one of the participants on the call said, well, we think that the tool could be completed every 2 weeks with IVG. And CMS sort of laughed because they had been thinking about maybe increasing it to every certification period. So I think they were quite pleased to think that there was some openness to having this tool completed every 2 weeks. I personally was very nervous about that, thinking about how time intensive that potentially could be to do this tool that frequently. That is far more frequently than the current HIS assessment and other assessments. So I'm wondering if it's going to be an added burden. So what they are going to do after the summer or toward the end of the summer is they're going to have four open forum sessions for hospices to call in, weigh in, comment, etc. And so I really want to encourage our listeners and hospices to be on the lookout for those four forums and to participate, because this is where we as an industry have the best opportunity to weigh in and provide feedback about, in particular, the frequency that we would be required to do this assessment. So that was kind of it in a nutshell.
Very good. This is really helpful information, and I'm so glad you were able to attend the call last week, because getting the news hot off the presses is quite nice. So what advice do you have right now for hospices in this time between where we have no heart tool, we now know kind of the projected timeline, what they're thinking about the updated heart tool? What should hospices do today to either prepare for something that's coming down the line, or do you do nothing and just wait and see what happens? What would be your advice?
I think really where we're at is we are kind of in a wait and see on the actual tool, but I think if we, you know, take advantage of these open forum sessions, we keep our eye on the HQRP website and what they post there, the changes, the updates, that will really help us. One of the challenges they faced with the Pilot A program was that they had not included an electronic medical record or EMR vendor. So someone on the call last week said, hey, are you going to include a vendor? And they said, yes, potentially they would be doing so. And so I think hospices, we don't know enough about it yet to prepare with our EMR vendor or to prepare internally for what this might look like. But as we, if we follow the progression and more information comes out, then we can begin those steps of preparing ourselves for submitting data, collecting data, and how does it correlate or collaborate with what we already have in place. because that is going to be the biggest challenge, is merging what an existing EMR system currently has available and what data is able to be pulled from it with what these expectations are. So knowing that and being proactive is going to be very helpful versus being caught by surprise and, you know, all of a sudden it's January 2021 and we have to begin filling this tool out and submitting it. So I think, you know, if hospices start thinking about what would work for them or what would not work for them, and then maybe collect questions or thoughts and feedback and participate in these forums, that would go a long way. And then also just keeping an eye on that website to see what they're posting and where it looks like they're going with it. I think that's probably the best approach at this point.
Fantastic. Thank you, Lynn.
Sure.
So if you recall last week at the boot camp, we got quite a few questions about CMS's TPE review, which we know stands for Targeted Probe and Educate. And this new process replaces the old ADR process, meaning that with the new way that they're doing TPE now, there are three distinct auditing rounds where CMS gathers a sample of 20 to 40 claims. Now, that could be all in the pool for 1 month's worth of billing, or it might take a couple of months to get the right sample. But ultimately, each round consists of 20 to 40 claims, and there are only three rounds, where with the old ADR process, you know, they would be requesting ADRs every time the hospice submitted a subsequent claim. So, you know, in order for hospices to even figure out where their vulnerabilities were, a few months had already passed, and there was never a breathing period where hospices had time to implement new practices or protocols to make sure that their billing was compliant and that their documentation supported eligibility. Where now, after the education comes, which is if the hospice's charge denial rate is less than about 15 to 20%, the Medicare Administrative Contractor, so that might be Palmetto or CGS or NGS, they conduct one-on-one training with the hospice regarding the reason for the claim denials and how to fix that in the documentation going forward. And I've actually had the honor of sitting in on some of these education calls with Medicare contractors and Weatherby's consulting clients. And I have to say that I thought the education actually went pretty well. And I'll tell you, the one thing that these reviewers look at very closely is the LCD guidelines. Now, we know they're not perfect, but right now, it's the only thing that we have for predicting and documenting in a way that supports the patient's terminal illness. So, you know, one of the things that we teach our clients is the recipe for documentation success. And so that intra-audit period allows hospices to educate their teams so that when the next pull is made, whether that be the following month or, you know, 45 to 60 days after the education, to make sure that round goes successfully. So, you know, we're hearing that, you know, there are some hospices that pass the TPE review on the first round. There are others that struggle. And we have now we're starting to get a lot of calls here at Weatherby for, well, you know, round one and round two didn't go so well. Now we need your help on round three. And, you know, we certainly do everything within our power to help the client, but I so wish they would have called two rounds ago versus when we're down to the final round to show that your documentation is sufficient to support payment. It's very difficult at round three to impact change. And probably the biggest difference between the old ADR process and the new TPE process is, for providers who fail that third and final round of the TPE, there will be basically a referral to another CMS contractor who can then, they can do a 100% prepayment audit. they could decide to do to share the information with a UPIC or a ZPIC or a recovery auditor to allow them to do an audit with a statistically valid sample, so that they can extrapolate the findings to the entire universe. So we're starting to now see providers who are being referred for not ultimately passing three rounds of TPE. So, you know, I think at this point, we encourage hospices to not wait until you come under TPE scrutiny. You know, documentation is everything the hospice has to stand on in terms of getting its claims paid. But from a logistical and clinical standpoint, it's the hardest thing to change, which is people's documentation habits. So we encourage hospices to start now doing education with their clinicians to improve their documentation.
That is really helpful, Carrie. And you know, one of the questions that we get at boot camp a lot is, what's been the overall impact? I mean, you know, Weatherby has the opportunity to work with many providers over, you know, across the country, et cetera. Can you speak to what the overall impact you're seeing is, either financially or operationally, of these new, quote, you know, more user-friendly edits or audits?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do think there are some things that make them more, you know, friendly, if you will. But there is no doubt these TPE audits, which are the lowest level of audits, are hitting hospices in their pocketbook. If the documentation submitted does not support the patient's terminal prognosis, the claim is denied. And so we know on average that hospices make around $5,500 per month of care delivered. So, you know, one patient being denied for $5,000 is not that huge of a deal. But let's say it's 10 patients. Well, then that turns into, you know, $50,000. Or 55,000. So the numbers in terms of financial damages with TPE start out relatively small, which is a good approach, but the challenge is that hospices have a very limited time to self-identify where their vulnerabilities are and to self-correct. But the impact, I think the real impact comes, Lynn, after a hospice fails three rounds, and then another contractor does a statistically valid sample for an entire five-year look-back period, and that's when you get into the millions of dollars and 10 millions of dollars.
Wow, so obviously that's a big bite. That's really serious. What would you suggest that hospices do to sort of mitigate this or navigate it if they're in or prior to a TP audit? I mean, do you have suggestions about how they might quickly fix their areas of vulnerability or ensure a successful first or second round?
Yeah, great question. So as it stands today, you heard me say earlier that we want hospices to self-identify any areas of vulnerability and self-correct. So if the hospice, the best route is to use the hospice's QAPI program to conduct pre-billing audits to identify where areas of vulnerability lie. You know, do you have issues with technical eligibility? Maybe your form doesn't print out correctly. It leaves off an attestation statement from a nurse practitioner or a physician. You know, maybe your physicians aren't completing their face-to-face encounter visits in a timely manner. So doing a pre-billing audit will give you an idea of where your trouble areas are. Then you can create performance improvement projects, PIPs. That, now, Lynn, this is your favorite stuff to talk about, which is quality. And
that's true.
Yeah. But they can create performance improvement plans to go from where they are to get to where they want to be in terms of the documentation. So don't wait until you come under an audit. Go ahead and do some pre-billing audits now to look strictly at conditions of payment to figure out where your challenging areas might lie. And I think, you know, when you have a robust QAPI program that identifies issues and closes the loop permanently, that's the real way to success. But we talk with clients all the time. And I mean, these are good hospices that are great providers, but their biggest challenge is documentation. And when I say, well, how long have you been having documentation challenges? They'll say, Well, I've been here 7 years, and we've had problems since I got here. There's for some reason hospices have a lot of trouble closing the loop when they identify issues, and so using QAPI to improve the documentation of your organization is by far the best advice for both doing well in the first or second round, or if things don't go well in the first round, you have very limited time to fix it, but it is fixable.
Okay, great. I think that's wonderful advice. So if we could just switch gears here and move on to your favorite topic as the pepper nerd, as you call yourself, or the pepper queen, as we call you. We know that the 2018 Pepper Report was released about 2 months ago in April, and you've been doing a lot of consultations, webinars, et cetera, with clients who are wanting to better read their Pepper Reports and apply it to their business. Can you tell me more about what you're seeing in regard to Pepper? Are there any trends or anything that any common patterns that you're seeing?
Yeah, so you're right, Pepper was released in April, and as of today, well, actually as of yesterday at 2:32 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, only 44.72% of all the hospices in the United States, which is about 4,401, had retrieved their Pepper report. And the biggest trend that I saw, Lynn, and this is not a good trend, and my current home state here is not making me proud, but here are the states where none of the hospices in that entire state have downloaded the Pepper reports for fiscal year 2018. And those states are Alabama, my current home state. I'm actually going to be doing some education in a couple of months for the Alabama Hospice and Palliative Care Organization, and I'm thinking of changing my presentation to include go get your Pepper report. Yeah. The other states with zero are Alaska, Arizona, Arkansas, Colorado, Connecticut, Delaware, the District of Columbia, and Guam. Everyone else, at least one person in the state has retrieved their Pepper report. So the number one advice that I would give, Lynn, is go retrieve the report. And CMS uses, they say that these Pepper reports are educational tools for hospices, but they absolutely expect you to download the report, identify your areas of vulnerability, and self-correct. So if you haven't gotten your Pepper report, today is the day to do it. And then the second piece, and for the sake of our time, Lynn, I'm going to be fairly brief on this, but if you're an executive at a hospice and you don't know how to read the Pepper report, or if you just, you print the document on a printer that prints in color so you can see if you have any red, bold areas. But I like to tell people, first of all, what happens if you only have a black and white printer? And it's not just identifying where a hospice is exceeding the 80th percentile, either from a national, state, or jurisdictional perspective. You want to identify trends before they become potential payment problems. So, you know, as you referenced earlier, Weatherby does a lot of education with our own clients about Pepper, because the one thing that we know without a shadow of a doubt is that Pepper reports drive payment-related scrutiny. So what we've seen with our own clientele, every person who's on a TPE audit at this time should have known that they were at risk because of the data already on their Pepper report. And the government likes to say, you know, the hospice either knew or should have known they were at risk for improper payment because the reports are there for the getting. So that's really the advice. And if you need advice, feel free to reach out to Weatherby or someone else who's a Pepper expert. Yes, I do like to call myself the Pepper Queen. I do not know why, but that is a self-appointed title. But that would be my advice is today, get the report. And if you don't know how to read it, find some help because it is one of the most important reports in our industry today.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And it's really about taking a proactive approach. It's not just pulling the report off and saying, hey, I'll just put it on my desk and ignore it because the data is from a year old.
Right.
It really shows you those trends. And being mindful of where you are in the blue line, as I call it when I talk with people, is so important from so many perspectives. Definitely payment related risk, but also just in quality. You know, what is the focus area? If you're looking from a quality perspective, where might you want to spend your time and attention? Right. And the PEPR report can kind of lead you there. So it's such a great foundational tool that all hospices, you know, should be using. So I really appreciate that overview and, you know, recommendation that people get in touch with it, you know, basically make it part of their day-to-day process, business, quality program, whatever it may be. So I'm really glad that you were able to speak to that for us today. So I think this has been a wonderful session, and I appreciate your time, Carrie, and I hope that the listeners, you know, have gotten something out of this, and we plan to do more summer hot topics, so stay tuned.
And Lynn, please remind everybody, we have another Weatherby, yes, Hospice Regulatory Boot Camp, September 16th, 17th, and 18th in National Harbor, Maryland. So we're looking forward to that. So if you're interested, please feel free to register for that. We'd love to see you in Maryland.
Yeah, thank you for that. I almost forgot.
Oh, gracious.
I guess we're going to be there too, right?
We are both indeed going to be there, yes.
All right. Well, have a great day, everyone, and thank you so much for your time.